Hello and welcome to the Week 7 edition of our Illinois High School Football Podcast. I'm Northwest Herald Sports Editor Kyle Neighbors. You can find me on Twitter at Kyle Neighbors. And with me as always, our Northwest Herald Sports Editor Joe Stevenson. You can find him at NWH underscore Joe Prep Zone. And our statewide high school football expert here at Shaw Media, Steve Soucy. And of course, you can find him on Twitter at The Seuss. Seuss, here we are in Week 7, and we're already down to 46 undefeated teams left in the field. Is this making your projections any more difficult?
It makes it a little bit more difficult in the sense that we're going to have a larger collection of one and two loss teams than we usually do, so the divisions will be a little bit different. I think we can point to it right now. The one thing that you can take away is not only that relatively low number of undefeated teams through 7 weeks, there are still 93 teams in the state with one loss, and that number is way higher than usual. So when it all washes out in the mail, what we're going to have is we're going to have less 9-0 teams, probably considerably more 8-1, 7-2 teams in the bracket. So there'll be a lot more evenness in the middle of each of the classifications.
Now, I guess with your latest projections, what stood out to you?
Well, the one thing that I'm noticing right now is that the 5-4 team group has a few more points than they usually do at this time of year. So what I'm finding now, and we discussed this a little bit briefly before, is for the first 7 weeks of the season, I just used the point total that teams have amassed, and rather than factoring the whole thing out, because there are too many unknown variables to do the whole thing. Moving forward, I will project the number of total points that I expect people to finish with. Usually you can do the math on this, and through 7 weeks, usually if you have 23 in the bank, you're usually good to go. This week I had teams that have 25 and 26 in the bank missing. So that means that number's starting to skew up, which means that 37s probably maybe shouldn't be breathing as easily as they may have been 2 weeks ago, and 38 should maybe start sweating it a little bit. So it's starting to skew up a little bit, and that's not surprising because right now everyone gets the benefit of the doubt. There aren't a lot of upsets that are being factored into this, but we'll have upsets, and that will change things. The number to look at right now, which sits at 272, that's the number of teams that I project to finish 5-4. If that number goes up, then the point total usually does. If it goes down, the point total usually does as well. So that's the number to keep an eye on. Like I said, it was at 272 this week. It was 269 last week. So it'll be interesting to see which direction that number goes in moving forward.
We know we already have one team in the area, Crystal Lake Central, that's going to be right on that line. If they're going to make the playoffs or not, most likely. You starting to see more and more coaches asking you where they're falling?
Well, that's the one question that you get a lot right now. And the most interesting thing about that to everyone is those last few teams that populate the field is what class are they in? Because that's when you start seeing teams shifting from 3A to 4A or 4A to 5A. When those last teams come in, are they 1A teams or are they 7A teams? Because that affects which direction those bubbles float on. So that's where I'm getting a lot of the questions right now is from the teams that think they're going to be at the top or what class am I going to fall in? What do you think? And that's where this starts to get real dicey, because if you look at the list of teams that I have missing right now on playoff points, they're from all over the spectrum. There are some small schools in there. There's some big schools in there. So you can't just look at that list and say, well, all the teams on the bubble are small schools, so the field's likely to push down and put bigger schools in bigger classes. It's not that simple because they're all from all over the spectrum.
Steve, the Sun-Times' Michael O'Brien reported on Monday that Douglas had become the 12th CPS school to forfeit the remainder of its schedule. What's going on and how might this affect the playoff field?
Well, when it comes down to that, the first thing that you have to keep in mind is that there are 32 schools in the public league that aren't eligible for the playoffs. They play in conferences that are not able to qualify for the playoffs. And some of those schools are from those conferences. So that's a little misleading. It's not like we've just eliminated 12 schools from the mix here from the playoff chase. It's probably more like 6 or 7. And on top of that, there are divisions in the Chicago Public League that only allow their top two teams to make it to the playoffs anyway. So most of the schools that are on this list were not getting to the playoffs anyhow, and they were factored in as such. So there hasn't been a really wide sweeping effect. There are two teams from that list that are a little bit surprising to me. One is Uplift, a small school program that as recently as 2 years ago was in the playoffs. The other is Whitney Young, who as recently as 2 years ago was 9-0 out of one of those small Chicago Public League conferences and the top seed in a playoff field. So there is some effect. I would say it's kind of small in the scheme of the playoffs. It speaks to a larger issue. However, that number is pretty large in the grand scheme of things about, you know, the numbers issues and all the other things. But in terms of the playoffs, I don't think this is going to have all that much of an effect. It's a tiny blip on the radar.
You know, one of my questions was regarding this, and I haven't had a chance to look through the schedules for these 12 teams. Now, yeah, it's not surprising that most of them weren't going to make the playoffs, but I was wondering how many of these teams had out-of-conference games and if someone was losing out on points that they were counting on.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting things to look at. I mean, the non-conference games, the one thing that the Public League has been doing with a lot of these teams, and it's kind of gone unnoticed, is they've been filling those vacancies on the schedule.
Right.
They've been doing it with teams that also lost games to someone else. So the public league schools ultimately probably won't see any real effect in their points. In fact, in some cases, they've actually improved their situations. In other situations, like you said, the non-con games that were crossovers, you're kind of, if you schedule one of those teams, to be honest with you, you're kind of playing Russian roulette anyway, because isolating maybe four or five public league programs that are consistently good, if you don't know that you might be getting somewhere between 1 and 7 points from any random Chicago Public League school that you may schedule, you're not paying attention. So, I mean, it's unfortunate for those teams that they're losing out an opportunity to maybe pick up a couple of extra playoff points. But when you schedule those teams, you know what you're getting yourself into, or at least you should.
All right, Joe, you know, looking at 8A, we're starting to see the field take shape a little bit. Lincoln Way East is clearly the class, another big win for them this week. Maine South, Loyola, Marist kind of lining up behind them, it looks like. Where do you think the top contenders are in that, and how does Huntley, one of our local teams here in the Northwest Herald area, that looking like they're going to finish 8-1, where do they fit in that conversation?
Well, I think Huntley fits in pretty well in that conversation. You know, last year, Huntley was a lower seed with a 6-3 record and went on the road, won at Stevenson, and then won a second-round game against Fremd and then lost to Loyola. This Huntley team is really good, and with Eric Mooney at quarterback, he gives opposing defenses something to see that they will rarely see, somebody with that combination of being able to run as fast as he can. He was, without a doubt, in my mind, is our fastest player in our area. Plus, he throws the ball really well. And that's not going to be somebody anybody's going to want to see in the playoffs. Plus, they have Melvin Anunagi Bonsu back there with him at running back, who's also really fast. And that's going to be a pretty tough team to see. Huntley got a little taste of it last year, and I think they want some more.
Seuss, you know, last year 8A was so competitive all the way through, and it's going to be deep again, maybe not as deep as last year, but with the way Lincoln Way East is playing, you know, they just played the number three team in 8A in Homewood Flossmoor and handled them. Do you see them kind of standing out above everyone else right now?
Yeah, I do. And there were a couple of things that happened in 8A this week that really interest me. And one of them was how easily Glenbard West took apart Lions. That was a team that Lions was a team that I thought might be able to enter at least the fringe of that conversation. But now after that game, I have serious doubts about whether or not where they really fall. And they tumbled considerably in the projection because of it. And the other one that gave me a little bit of pause moving forward about it, and it was, they took a loss, was Naperville Central. They played a very good team out of Ohio this week. Granted, they had to travel here. They lost by 10 points, but that does not tell the tale of that story. They were in that football game, and for Naperville Central to be in that football game, that tells me how good they really are. I mean, you're talking about a team that's nationally ranked that in the fourth quarter they were actually leading that game. So Naperville Central is a team that I'm definitely keeping on my radar as a serious threat to make a run here. So that was what kind of came out of 8A for me this week. Again, when you look at this field and you look at the projection and you look at some of these potential first-round matchups, you see the depth and quality of the field. I mean, this week I had a 16-17 projection of Bolingbrook and Stevenson in the first round. I mean, that's just an example of what we're talking about. You know, some really, really good strong programs that you think about, you know, as potential semifinal, quarterfinalist type teams. And here they are once again ramming heads in the first round.
Steve, I was trying to look through 8A and find a team, a two-loss team, maybe a three-loss team, because last year it was Maine South. I think the year before, didn't Marist have two or three losses and make it to the state championship game? Who might be that team this year? Is there anybody that you're finding out there?
I'll tell you a team that I have projected to finish with three losses that I really, really like, and that's Gurney Warren. They play in the Northwest Suburban. They don't get a lot of publicity because they're buried behind Lake Zurich and Stevenson. But this is a team that gave Lake Zurich all they wanted into double overtime. They played Stevenson to a 7-3 game, and they have what you need to be successful in the postseason, which is an explosive all around standout athlete that can take a game over in Micah Jones. So I have those guys seated as 24th, but if you asked me for a dark horse in 8A, I would put it on Gurney Warren right now.
You know, speaking of Lake Zurich, Seuss, you know, they've been number one in 7A for several weeks after that East St. Louis loss earlier in the year, and they actually got bumped down to number two this week. East St. Louis went back up to number one. They got us. East St. Louis with six of the ten first place votes, and Normal Community actually got one down in fourth place. But did you think that was fair? How did you vote that?
Well, when I vote in polls, and I know everybody does it differently, is that I just try to take all of the information I have and say to myself, if these two teams were playing on a neutral site, who do I think is going to win? And I think East St. Louis would win the game. So that's how I vote. And I know a lot of people do it differently, but and I think that if you don't do those kinds of explorations about the way that you're doing things, then why don't we just stack all the undefeated teams at the top and then rank the one-loss teams next? I mean, if you're not willing to do those kinds of leaps of concentration and, like, thinking about, you know, what you're really doing there, then, I mean, like I said, just stack the undefeated teams at the top, stack the one-loss teams next, and go from there, because that's what you have to do. And, I mean, I think it's very close, but, I mean, we can't pick ties on the poll site, although sometimes I wish we could.
Hey, I don't vote in the polls. You guys both do. And I don't mean this in a disparaging way at all, but Lincoln Way Central at 5-1 with a 14-point loss to Lincoln Way East, number 10 in 7A, are they a little underrated?
I think so. And, I mean, I think that's one of those things that, I mean, they weren't even appearing on people's radar until they were leading Lincoln Way East at halftime. A lot of people were just kind of, I don't want to say dismissive of them, but when you look at that class and you look at the fact that right now, I mean, it looks like we're going to have three, maybe four undefeated teams at the end of the season, and you need to start considering some teams with one or two loss and where you're going to rank them. And I think they are. I don't think they're necessarily getting the credit that they deserve. An early win early in the season over a good Lincoln Way West team kind of gives them a little bit of a pedigree win. So, I mean, yeah, I think they're definitely a little bit understocked right now in terms of where they belong.
So it's just a matter of them kind of catching up. Is that why? Because everybody else was already ranked? And
well, you know, that's – I mean, yeah, some people – and I'm not one of these people – some people have a hard time moving a team down unless they lose. So, yeah, catching up is a good way to describe it. And considering that, you know, Lincoln Way Central hasn't been prominent for a few years, it took a few weeks just for them to get on people's radar. They didn't start the season at eighth or ninth in the polls. They weren't even in anyone's consciousness until you know, a couple weeks into the season. So you're right. It's a climbing thing. And then if you're caught behind some teams that are playing well and not losing football games, it's hard to take someone like Lincoln Way Central and put them ahead of those teams.
You know, Seuss, I'm one of those guys that I wasn't sure. I was looking at the bottom of my ballot this week, and I was trying to decide that if I wanted to put Lincoln Way Central in at 10 or leave Mount Carmel in there. I think I ended up going with Mount Carmel, but I didn't feel great about it. And then at the top, I actually went with you. I put East St. Louis back to number one this week. I was concerned after I want to say the running back is Jarrell Anderson, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
He goes down with a knee injury early in the year, and I was a little bit concerned. But this was a team that I thought was the best team in the state, regardless of class, before we started the year. And now I'd go ahead and say it's Lincoln Way East, but I still think East St. Louis is right up there, particularly in 7A. So I went ahead and moved them back. I considered putting Glenbard West actually in front of Lake Zurich as well.
Yeah, it was one of those things that I thought about too, to be completely honest with you, when I looked at it. But I'm still trying to let the West Suburban kind of sort itself out. I think you always have to let that happen, because I'm never sure how good Hinsdale Central is. I'm never sure how good Oak Park River Forest is. All these teams that are usually pretty good and playoff bound, I kind of got to wait for that conference to sort itself out. I believe in Glenbard West. Even after watching them lose in the fashion that they did to Maine South, you could still see the components of a pretty good football team. And if they manage to slide down into 7A, which I think is a little iffy right now, I think they might end up in 8A. But if they're in 7A, they're absolutely a team that nobody wants in there, because, I mean, they're gaining momentum. They, like I said, they took care of a Lions team that a lot of people really like a lot, really easily. So, I mean, Glenbard West right now is a team on the serious uptick. And that's not surprising to me. I fully expected them to rebound from it and get themselves back into elite form. But yeah, it's been interesting to kind of watch this East St. Louis thing, because if you're a scoreboard watcher, you look at that game this week against Belleville West and it might give you pause, because that was a close football game. Belleville West is pretty good. I actually put them on the bottom of my ballot this week. So, I mean, they're a good team. So don't look at that score and say, well, East St. Louis didn't roll everyone like they usually do. They're good. I mean, so that's a good win for them. They're obviously not going to get any serious tests for the rest of the season. So for them, it's a matter of keeping the eye on the prize and getting themselves in the postseason in the best physical shape they possibly can. So they're good. They're loaded. They've still got two good running backs in that system. Jig Brown's having a very good year replacing Anderson. They've got another young guy that I can't remember his name right now. He's very talented as well. Christian Perez is a very good quarterback. This is still a really good football team without Anderson, and in my mind, still the clear 7A favorite.
Staying in the Associated Press poll, you know, we've talked about several weeks in a row now trying to figure out how we wanted to vote teams in 4A. I think the consensus has been Rochester number one. I had Johnsburg all the way up to number two, and I felt a little dirty having to move a team down that's hanging 50 points on everyone week in and week out down this week, but it was hard to ignore Morris's win over DeKalb. Seuss, what did you take away from that game?
Well, you can't ignore Morris, and if you are, I mean, that's a problem. I mean, I think ultimately this is one of the difficult things about trying to pre-classify everyone, because prior to the season it looked like Morris was going to be a 4A team. I'm pretty comfortable with saying that they're probably going to be a 5A team based on the way that the numbers are falling right now. I was fascinated to see what would happen with Morris if they got into the 4A field, because from what I've been told, I have not seen Morris in person, but from what I've been told by some people that I trust on this topic, is physically up front and in the trenches, Morris would have been way too much for everybody in 4A. And that may even include Rochester. So I'm kind of hoping that maybe they still get back down there, because I'm kind of interested to see if that's true, because, you know, I mean, Morris to me feels like a 5A team. But enrollment-wise, I mean, they may get down to four sometime in the near future, and it might even be this year. So it's very interesting, and I took a lot away from that DeKalb win. It was a team that I thought was good enough to run the table and make some noise in 6A, and I'm not necessarily convinced that that's still not the case. But Morris beating them, I mean, that's a really nice job by them, and it was kind of clearing a hurdle for them, because for the last couple of years they haven't been able to get past DeKalb, and some people kind of thought maybe they were a little bit more talented than they showed.
Steve, I looked it up. Morris has beaten Washington. That's 4-2.
Good Washington team. Very good.
Quincy, Notre Dame 3-3. Rochelle still ranked? Was ranked for a while.
Well, I think, I'm not sure if they're still ranked. I know they fell out, but I feel like they've been gaining some momentum to get back near the poll. I don't think they're quite in yet.
Rochelle's 4-2 and DeKalb's 5-1. That's a pretty nice resume. And it's only given up 65 points all year.
Yeah, it's a good team. I mean, there's no doubt points, about excuse it. Me. I've been ranking them second for a couple of weeks now, even before this happened. And I obviously I feel pretty confident about that now. But Rochester is still in my mind the number one team. I'm really interested to see what happens in their game this week. The huge rivalry, the Leonard Bowl down there with Sacred Heart Griffin, is another big game this week, in a week full of huge games. So if Rochester takes them out as well and does it in a convincing fashion as they've done pretty much everyone else this year, I still think that number one perch is theirs without too much question. But maybe if it goes the other way, you'd be able to convince me that maybe the number one tide should maybe turn a little bit.
Seuss, if Morris does end up in 5A, are they on the north side or the south side of the bracket?
If Morris ends up in, was 4A, 5A, what was your ask?
If they ended up in 5A, would they be on the north or south side?
5A is one of those things when you're looking at it, I think the line has them fairly convincingly in the south side right now.
Okay,
but
that's what I thought, but...
Yeah, it's a tricky situation because that line is kind of broken on, like, Morris... teams around that geographic area. So if the field were to change somehow and some southern teams snuck in through either the top or the bottom, Morris would be one of the teams that would probably be pushed north.
Hey, I'm all for a Phillips-Morris 5A title game. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, that would be an interesting one. There's no doubt about that.
All right, well, let's get into our games to watch for the week. There's actually a bunch of big games this week. I think there's 8 undefeated games, right, Seuss?
Yeah, there are 8 6-0 showdowns this week. They're all over the place, and in all the classes across the board, there's a lot of big ones. And then go another layer down, there's some more undefeated teams playing 5-1 teams this week. So there are a lot of huge games. I would put the list at around 15 or 20 that I'm really interested to see the outcome, and a lot of them, in my mind, are coin flips.
So I can go ahead and just rip up those projections you sent me last night?
Okay. Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
All right, well, Joe, what do you got? What's your game to watch this week?
Well, speaking of undefeated matchups, I'm going to go to the mid-suburban West, where we got a couple 6-0s. Hoffman Estates, which is number 6 in 7A, at Barrington, which is number 5 in 8A. Both teams had a close game last week against 3-3 teams. Hoffman Estates just getting past Schaumburg by 4 points. Barrington beating Palatine by 2. So I think this is a pretty appealing matchup to see how good these two teams are.
Yeah, and I'm going to stay in the north suburbs and go with Lake Zurich and Stevenson. I've been apprehensive, as I was saying, all along this year, voting Lake Zurich number 1 in 7A. I think this is going to be the best matchup we see for them to see exactly where they are. Stevenson's a great program. I feel like we kind of didn't give Stevenson enough credit earlier in the year, and they've been rolling since. Seuss, gut reaction, who do you got, Lake Zurich or Stevenson?
Well, I lean towards Lake Zurich, but it's one of those games when I look at it on paper, I tell myself there's a lot of ways that it could go. And the one thing that people, I think, tend to forget about Stevenson, they still haven't lost to an Illinois team.
Right.
So, I mean, that's one of the things that when I look at it, they lost to Muskegon, Michigan, a really strong program up there that looks like they have mountains of men up on the front line because they're a very big physical team. And Stevenson has really held its own in all games against Illinois teams, won them all. And it's not exactly a slouch schedule. So I like Lake Zurich's defense. I have all season. I think that might be enough to get them over the top in this game, but I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if Stevenson won.
All right, Seuss, go ahead and wrap it up for us. What's your favorite game to look at this week?
Well, my favorite game, that's a thing that I need some sort of flow chart for, but but one of the games that I'm very interested in this week is I'm interested in Marist and Nazareth. I Marist right now, for as highly as I have them ranked, is a team that I don't really know if they're actually as good as I believe that they are. Because you look back at the beginning of the season, they scraped through a win over Brother Rice, and that's not looking like nearly as good a win as we would have thought it was at the beginning of the season. Brother Rice is 1-5 right now. The combined record of everyone Marist has played through 6 weeks is 9-28.
That's not good.
It's not good. Now, granted, they've rolled some of these teams, but I don't think we know how good they are. They have some elite talent, but I don't think we know honestly how good this football team is right now. We're going to find out this week with Nazareth, because Nazareth also 6-0, a little on the young side, but they are very, very talented. And they don't have the same stigma as of not playing anyone and beating anyone of consequence yet. They own wins over a very solid Niles Notre Dame team. They beat Bennett. These are teams that are pretty good football teams. So I don't think Marist is going to scare them. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how Marist really stacks up in this game. And that seems really strange to see from a team that I've had ranked in the top five all year long. But I am not 100% sold on them right now. And I'm interested to see how they respond to this challenge.
All right. That'll wrap it up for us this week. I hope you guys are looking forward to the chaos as much as I am. For Joe Stevenson and Steve Soucy, I am Kyle Neighbors, and we'll talk to you next week, guys.